this is your Polycast for Friday, June 24th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Blue Cross and Blue Shield shakes up the Minnesota health insurance market. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota has delivered a major blow to health reform in Minnesota, Mark Zadeklik reports.
The Blues will stop selling health coverage to individuals and families next year. The company reported an operating loss of $265 million on individual market plans last year and projects more than $500 million in losses over 3 years. The company said medical costs have far exceeded premium revenue. The insurer says 103,000 policyholders will be affected. University of Minnesota health economist Roger Feldman called the departure a major blow to Minnesota's already troubled individual insurance market.
What this says about the individual market is that it is very unstable, that it has been disrupted by a number of events, and we still don't know whether it will recover or not from those disruptions.
Blue Cross says its much smaller subsidiary, Blue Plus, will continue to offer plans on the individual market. The company says Blue Plus has only about 13,000 enrolled members. Mark Zadeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
During this week's nurses' strike at Alina Hospitals, the quality of care replacement nurses are providing has been a major debating point. The union has described bad conditions, and Alina has offered reassurances. So does care suffer during nurses' strikes? Lorna Benson takes a look at what little research there is on that topic.
One-off patient injuries or deaths during a hospital strike can attract a lot of media attention. But beyond anecdotal incidents, there's just one comprehensive study looking at whether nursing strikes can be fatal for patients. The 2012 review analyzed 50 nursing strikes in New York State over the 20 years ending in 2004. Some of the hospitals used replacement workers. Most did not. But the overall effect of the New York strikes was essentially the same. More patients died because of strikes than would have if there had been no strikes. Samuel Kleiner co-authored the study.
We think that it's an important study to potentially inform the consequences of nursing strikes.
The findings were dramatic, complex, and raised more questions. The hospital death rate during a strike rose 0.3 percentage point to just over 2%. That fractional increase was statistically significant and, compared to non-strikes, amounts to an 18% greater risk of death. The risk of being readmitted for a complication also rose. But the strikes and location were quite different from a one-week walkout in Minnesota. The average strike was longer than a month. And Kleiner stops well short of saying the findings are applicable to a Alina strike.
All of our results, it should be emphasized, focus on New York State.
So, does the study prove strikes harm patients?
It's still enough of an impact that I think if you as a patient had the choice to avoid going to the hospital, it's a good time to avoid going.
Economist Joanne Spetz is a professor in the School of Nursing at the University of California, San Francisco.
You know, if you had a choice of having your knee replacement now or waiting until the strike is over, you may as well wait. But obviously, if you have an emergency come up, you just need to go. And, you know, that risk differential is not going to be huge. But it is notable. It's not a zero change.
Spetz says strikes are disruptive, and it's hard for replacement nurses to provide optimal care when they're new to a hospital's protocols and layout. Briar Grote is a striking intensive care nurse at Abbott Northwestern. When she was hired 2.5 years ago, Grote says her orientation training lasted 4 weeks.
To get familiar with the hospitals, their protocols, where their equipment is, different ways for, our procedures, there's a reason that they do that, and they require that.
In contrast, Alina Health's replacement nurses started training a few days before the strike.
And to think that they're just going to allow people who've never even set foot into that hospital before to take care of patients that, especially in an ICU area, it's a scary thought.
That's an argument you hear a lot from union nurses in the battle for public support.
I think in general, it's a tricky argument for the nurses' union to make.
John Christensen is a professor at the School of Public Health at the University of Minnesota. He agrees there is a lot of potential for problems with replacement nurses, but he says the public is just as likely to fault the union as the hospitals.
If you're in favor of management's approach, your response to that would be the nurses union put their patients in that situation by going on strike. If you're in favor of the union approach, then you'll say, well, we gave management ample warning about what was going to happen, and they weren't prepared, and they should have been prepared.
And at this point, the issue of safety at Allina hospitals is little more than a war of words between the union and management. Minnesota health regulators increased inspections at the five striking hospitals, and Allina says the agency has found no issues of concern. The health department is only saying that if it did substantiate reports of significant concern, it would act immediately to protect patient safety and health. Covering health, I'm Lorna Benson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Outgoing St. Paul School Superintendent Valeria Silva says she stands by the decision she's made in the role. Solveig Wastved reports.
Valeria Silva, who has been St. Paul superintendent since 2009, will leave the post next month after the school board voted this week to remove her. During her tenure, she's made several controversial decisions, including creation of a racial equity program and a move to put special education students in regular classrooms. She says she doesn't regret the policies.
Yes, I would have changed some things and in implementation, but the vision and the belief system still... I sleep well at night knowing that I did the right thing.
Board Chair John Schumacher said the district needs to make changes to deal with budget deficits. The board named retired Roseville Superintendent John Tyne as interim leader and does not yet have a timeline for the search. Solveig Wastved, Minnesota Public Radio News.
St. Paul's newly sworn-in police chief says it's important to bring a critical look to incidents involving the use of force by his officers. Laura Ewan has that.
Todd Axtell is a 27-year veteran of the department. He says over the years, he's prompted thoughtful discussions on whether use of force was necessary and if officers could have handled situations differently. Axtell says the camaraderie that officers share, as wonderful as that can be, shouldn't trump accountability.
We have to make sure that the thin blue line doesn't mean that we are going to cover up our mistakes.
Axtell says he'd also like to see a wider range of perspectives on the Police Civilian Review Board that oversees complaints against officers. He says the number of residents on the panel should be increased, but that officers should continue to serve on the board. An audit last year recommended removing two police union members from the board to create more autonomy. Laura Ewan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
State Auditor Rebecca Otto was in court yesterday arguing that a recent move to privatize county financial reviews is unconstitutional. Tim Pugmire reports.
Lawmakers passed a measure in 2015 allowing counties to bypass the state auditor's office and hire private accounting firms to conduct annual audits. Otto's lawsuit challenging the law argues it violates the separation of powers and undermines the core function of her office. Following a Ramsey County court hearing, Otto said she's standing up for taxpayers.
You know, I took an oath to defend the Minnesota Constitution, and that's exactly what I'm doing with this lawsuit.
The lawyer representing two of the counties named as defendants said Otto overstated the impact of the change and has shown no evidence of a constitutional violation. Judge Leslie Merrick is expected to rule before the law takes effect on August 1st. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Nearly 5 years after the last Ford Ranger rolled off the assembly line in St. Paul, the car company says it now knows what a century of manufacturing left on the site. Ford told a meeting of neighbors last night that it has completed an environmental investigation and that cleanup can begin. Tim Nelson has more.
It's taken a long time to get here. Ford announced it would shut down its St. Paul plant 10 years ago. It closed in December of 2011. Almost half the time since has been devoted to an investigation of possible pollution on the site. Minnesota Pollution Control Agency hydrogeologist Amy Hadieris told more than 100 people in Highland Park last night that the results are in.
We still got a couple of other reports coming in, but things are looking pretty good. And it's certainly a site that can be, you know, cleaned up and put to whatever use the community and the city wants to see happen.
It isn't perfect. She said there are dozens of areas of scattered contamination. The soil under the former employee parking lot has a lot of petroleum contamination. And then there's the dump out back on the south end of the site. Hadiera said it dates back to the 1920s and was likely used until World War II.
That's an area where back in the day, wastes were disposed of directly on the ground, maybe burned, buried. And so that represents an area where, again, there's that hydrocarbon solvent contamination and also some heavy metals, such as specifically lead is probably the main one.
Rob Corey, director of global real estate services for Ford, says the automaker has decided to clean up the mess itself rather than sell to a developer to fix. And company officials said they've already started digging up the dirty soil and hauling it away for appropriate disposal.
We expect, based on what we know today, that the majority of the site will be available for the types of things that the city's been talking about for a number of years, which is mainly that mixed-use development where you have some retail, you have some office, you have some residential, maybe you've got multifamily with retail on the first floor.
And that will open the door to a swath of open land about half the size of downtown St. Paul, among some of the most prime real estate in the Twin Cities. Chris Tolbert represents the area on the St. Paul City Council.
I've had a hard time finding sites, not only in the Twin Cities or Minnesota, but around the country that would be comparable to the potential of this site. It's on the banks of the Mississippi River. It's equidistant between downtown St. Paul and downtown Minneapolis. It's minutes from the airport, and it's in a premier neighborhood that people want to be in.
He says the results of the environmental study are a milestone that finally clears away years of doubt and makes way for zoning changes, street and open space planning. He says it also calls for a hard look at transportation. Neighbors are already complaining about traffic in the area and fear hundreds of new residents could only make it worse. Tolbert said a clean site will make planning for a transit line along West 7th Street, including a potential rail line, even more critical. Ronnie Brooks lives nearby and has been on a task force pondering the Ford site's future for almost a decade. Brooks says the fears of what might be lurking down the block may finally be lifting.
What I heard tonight, and of course we need to learn more, is that there's not a problem that we couldn't solve, and that Ford wants to see, for its own protection as well as for ours, that the cleanup is done well.
But others said there's still plenty left to worry about. While some were concerned about traffic and density on the site, others said they're worried that plans for parkland and transit and other amenities will squander a chance to build the city's property tax base. Gene Sonnen lives just up Cleveland Avenue from the site and wants value out of a future development.
So we need tax relief in St. Paul. We don't need no more green space.
Still, it'll be a while before anything takes shape. Ford says the cleanup will likely take until at least 2019. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News, St. Paul.
And that's your Polycast for this Friday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. Of course, the other big news in the last 12 hours or so was the big vote in Britain to exit the European Union. We've got plenty more on that on the radio, so tune in. In the meantime, have a great weekend, and I'll see you again here on Monday.